Changes. This is where you get mesmerized.
Welcome to the May 15th, 2010 edition of Get Resmerized. I am your host, Res Miranda. My site, as you well know, is resmerized.com. I am your online psychic. That's the place to find me. That's the only place to find me. I'm a pixel person, and you will get resmerized.
If the words sound slightly wrong, that's the way they wrote the song. Sad to say, but that's the way it goes. So,
and of course, as always, we're going to start with our little mini readings here. You go to my site. You fill in the request and you tell me what your big major malfunction is or what somebody else's is, because it's always somebody else's net. Never us. Wrong. First one. Dan, 1982, says, this has been kind of a lifelong problem with me. First of all, I can't fix your whole life, Dan. It's just recently that I can now see how it affects my life and relationships. That's a good start. I suppose the only way to say it is that, for a lack of a better word, I think I project a sense of weirdness to those around me. Okay, I've talked to counselors plenty about my personality and my background, but something I've noticed in the last few years is that very often people around me at jobs tend to think I am strange or even crazy. It's a label I very much resent, because I've only recently begun to throw off the notion that I am somehow disturbed or unusual. I'm kind of sort of morbidly curious about how you do that, how you throw that off. I can safely say that I am an overdramatic person. Sometimes I like to overreact to certain things to try to be humorous, or I even do it unintentionally, and I most definitely have some quirks to my personality, but then again, who doesn't? Outside of definitely being withdrawn and rather shy, I think there's nothing at all wrong with me, but for some reason, I always get stuck with this label as a strange one. This was starkly displayed to me a week ago when I was coming out of the men's room in the employee area of the store, and I don't think I want to know what happened, really, with that. Okay, it's a really long question he sent me, but does anyone think that you might be able to help me with this, or is this something that requires much deeper effort? No, and yeah, okay. One card probably isn't going to fix you, but we're going to see. What can you possibly do about this? You know, it's true that we exude an aura. Your body language, what you think and feel about yourself. Even if you say that you don't believe that there's anything wrong with you, or that you're strange, or you're really weird, you have quirks like everybody else, blah, blah, blah. But from this big, long thing that you wrote, and certainly from, you know, from some of the things that you said, it's evident that you don't believe that. And so what you're going to project to anybody that you're around is that you're weird. So, you know, that's kind of it in a nutshell. It can be changed if you really want to. Even the overdramatic stuff with medication. The Ten of Cups is a card. This is interesting. Normally this card is about, of course, in your case, it would be a strange, different explanation. The Ten of Cups is usually about being happy, contented, being in a situation that you want to be in, your life's going great, all that stuff, you know, you have everything you want. But it's also symbolic of wishful thinking. Now, what is wishful thinking but wishing for something that we don't believe we have or that we are? So does it require much deeper effort? Abso-freaking-lutely. Can I help you with that? Yeah. Yes. Genuinely, I can. Much deeper effort. And, you know, a few consultations with me might not be as life-changing as you want it to be. And you might require further different kinds of assistance. But, you know, we'll start. We'll talk. That's how you start anything, right? Right. All right. From Mina. First of all, I'm engaged to the most wonderful, loving man ever, she says. We've been together for 6 years. We're getting married, and I have no doubts at all because I know he's the one for me. And we're about to see why she's writing me about that. We're truly happy and very much in love. Back in high school, I dated my first love for nearly 2 years, and our parents were not happy with us dating, so they stopped us from seeing each other. His family moved to a different town and enrolled him in a different school. He told me he had to let me go and for me to try to live a full, happy life. It was hard because I didn't want to move on, but I knew it was something I had to do. While dating my fiancé, I did try to look for him, but I was never able to find him. So a few days ago, I get a message from him on a social network website. Of course, I was shocked and my heart literally stopped and I couldn't believe what I was reading. He found me. And it has been almost 10 years since we saw and talked to each other. 10 years. We sent messages back and forth. They communicated, blah, blah, blah. So she's asking, should she see him? She just wants to give him a great big hug, she says. And yay. And hope your life works out and can't stop thinking about him and all that stuff. What should I do? She says, will I make it worse if I see him? Will I regret doing that? Thanks in advance for your thoughts. Okay, my thoughts are, aside from my psychic reading, that you're obviously not happy being engaged to someone and you need to deal with that But most of all, you need to stop fantasizing about the past. You need to also realize that what you're doing is along the lines of betrayal to your fiancé. I know darn well you're not sitting around talking about this with him. And I would think about putting the shoe on the other foot there. What if that were you and he was doing all of this? Wouldn't you have a major freak out? Yeah. You're not. You need to decide which one you want. The past is the past, and I would truly advise you to let it go. But let's see what the cards say. That's my thoughts. By the way, in a reading, I look at the cards, I hear from Spirit. I usually don't give you all my thoughts because you're not asking for my opinion. You're asking for something metaphysical. But I just gave it to you anyway. Okay. Ooh, okay. We have here the Lover's card. This is interesting. It's not specifically, or literally, I should say, about being physical lovers with anyone. It is about having chemistry. Now, chemistry can be a good thing. Chemistry can be a bad thing. Chemistry can cause addictions. And this is really, I'm going to put this real quickly in that category for you. You have an addiction to the past. You have an addiction to the fantasies you had about what could have been, would have been, should have been. It's fiction. Fiction. Let's look at your life now, right now. Look at what you have. Look at where you are. Make up your mind. Mabel Girl says, I've been seeing a guy for 3 months. In the beginning, he said he didn't want a relationship. Then he said he really cared and wants to take it slow. He's been divorced and been really hurt. He says he's planning to leave the state and didn't want to get serious either. But he says he doesn't know when this will happen and that it won't be anytime soon. There are times when he'll say that he wants me to go with him when he leaves. He spends almost every night at my house. We do things together. It's been 3 months and he's still saying he wants to take it slow and he cares about me. He says he's not dating anyone else. I'm not sure if he's just here for whatever or if he really cares about me. So let's find out. What should I do? She says. 3 months? That's not that long, really. Okay. What should you do? The Nine of Swords is a card about being incredibly mentally and emotionally frustrated. When you're in that kind of a state, as you obviously are, it's the absolute worst time to make a decision. The second thing to think about is that you're in a situation that's making you feel like that. So I would say the thing to do would be to relax, sleep on it, don't do anything, don't make up your mind right now. 3 months, give it some more time. Lot more time. Well, not like a year, but you know, maybe another month. Let's start there and see what happens, shall we? Yeah, good idea. I know. I do it all the time.
Este samba que é misto de maracatu, essa magia preto veio. Mas que nada, um samba como este é tão legal. Você não vai querer e chegue no final.
A free mini reading on the show, just go to resmerize.com and send Res a resmerandum. She'll talk about you in front of everybody.
Thank you.
Looking around the world today, we observe a rapid increase in so-called religious, psychic, and pseudo-mystical movements that have their origin in part in the Far East, but also in the United States, with an accompanying increase of psychic, metaphysical, and occult practices. Such developments in themselves are not so startling, as Helena Blavatsky wrote in 1891, "Psychism, with all its allurements and all its dangers, is necessarily developing among you, and you must be aware lest the psychic outruns the mental and spiritual development. Psychic capacities held perfectly under control, checked and directed by the mental principle, are valuable aids in development. But these capacities running riot, controlling instead of controlled, using instead of being used, lead the student into the most dangerous delusions and the certainty of moral destruction. Watch, therefore, carefully this development, inevitable in your race and evolution period, so that it may finally work for good and not for evil." H.P. Blavatsky to the American Conventions. People hungering for answers to life's mysteries, and no longer satisfied with the answers of established institutions, are attracted to psychic and pseudo-mystical movements, also represented by a certain traditional Oriental sects. Their teachings are generally baited with personal benefit. Their members aspire, for the most part, to attain what I call inferior occult powers, the selfish kind. The secrets of the different chakras or nerve centers, for example, exert a strong fascination on some people, but many are unaware of the grave dangers to themselves in such techniques and powers, especially when sought for advantage and influence over others, which 9 out of 10 times is what somebody else wants to do. Leaving aside harmful psychological effects, physical disease can even result from awakening the chakras and nerve centers to abnormal activity, and that's things that you're just not used to doing, thus disturbing the balance of the pranas or life forces. Again, many people know, for instance, about hatha yoga practices, or they think they do. I do not refer here to relatively harmless physical exercises, which of course are beneficial, but to psycho-astral exercises, psychic exercises, which usually involve particular body positions in connection with breath control practices that do put you in altered states. These not only can influence consciousness in a disturbing way, but can also interfere with the normal circulations of forces in the body. It can throw you way out of kilter. Imbalance. That's not what we want. From these facts, we see the great demands made on our judgment, which we must train through spiritual study and corresponding life. A related area that attracts great interest is mental or faith healing. In 1890, Blavatsky also wrote, "As the preparation for the new cycle proceeds, the latent psychic and adult powers in man are beginning to germinate and grow. Hence the rapid growth of such movements as Christian Science, mind cure, metaphysical healing, spiritual healing, and so forth. All these movements represent nothing but different phases of the exercise of these growing powers is yet not understood, and therefore but too often ignorantly misused. Understand once and for all that there is nothing spiritual or divine in any of these manifestations. The cures affected by them are due simply to the unconscious exercise of occult power, hidden power, that is, on the lower planes of nature, usually of prana or life currents, the selfish stuff. Spiritual perception and wisdom arise as a natural result of daily practice of such principles, making a part of your life. Seek first the kingdom of heaven, and all other things will be added. You've heard that before. Not only physical needs, but also psychic powers, energies, and faculties will fall into place naturally and safely when enlightened and guided by the spiritual sun within. You do that yourself. Heal your soul, and you will heal your body. Through various means, a medium can cause his astral body to leave his physical body. But while the medium is in a trance, other creatures use his physical and astral body for their own purposes. And the medium does not generally realize that messages are being revealed through his body. Elementals or individuals who have died are attracted whenever there is a wish to get in touch with astral guides. Strong emotions, excitement, selfish wishes or desire can be sufficient to attract such astral beings, because all thoughts have their particular shape and color in the astral world. First, they are noticed by these beings, who can effortlessly trace them to their producer, you, and then try to influence and harm him. They dominate the devotee with their own passionate vibrations, causing him to indulge his inclinations, desires, and evil impulses more strongly. The devotee's tormentor may go further and press him to dire resolutions and actions. In some cases, resisting these influences leads to a lasting loss of nervous strength, and therefore to neuroses and a life overshadowed by unwholesome influences. For when the gate to the astral world is opened, it is very difficult or impossible to close it again. Everyone has to find wisdom on his own path by experiences, looking within, interior elevation, and the unfolding of his innate qualities. Connection with such astral guides makes us helpless and creates lasting dependence. Such a person may become a slave of spirits his whole life. We should seek instead to become a mediator, one who does not let himself voluntarily or involuntarily be ruled by astral beings, but who is able to control them. Such a person is the master. He is self-ruled. He thinks independently. He is impersonal. He has wisdom, knowledge, and the power of discrimination. There is nothing more important when you do readings and spiritual work. He does not use the higher spiritual energies flowing through him for himself, but for the welfare of others. When a spiritual entity speaks through him, in contrast to the medium, he remains fully conscious. You know what's going on. Many people desire occult powers without satisfying the necessary preconditions. To possess and control such powers beneficently requires selfless service to others over many lifetimes. Anyone who meddles with occult power without adequate preparation risks becoming involved with mediumship or black magic. Through mediumship, he becomes a slave of external forces and beings, and by the misuse of them, which divests him of his judgment and perception, he becomes the blind tool of the destructive powers in nature. Tradition holds that ages ago, whole nations were ruined by corrupted pseudo-occultism, and the same danger threatens mankind today if the expansion of such arts continues unchecked. Be New Agey if you want. You have no idea what you're playing with. We are able to grow only from within, impersonally, and without premeditation. Because all that is great and beautiful is born in silence.
I was born in the summer of Sam, smaller and sooner than planned. When the spitting image of a man raised by wolves on the fat of the land. Clear romance, beauty, and damned, tomorrow will come if she can. Just want a woman who can walk on a wire with the trembling glass in her hand. Over the hilltops, the fire engine rolls. Down the valley, deep, but still it goes. Got my weapons out, and I'm laying low on this end of the telescope. Along you ramble the whole of the world, through blackwater jungles full bliss. Let's feast of famine, you eat what you kill. There's no need to bring God into this. My heart is heavy and pressed to the bone. Some people too heavy to hold. Now salutations take me as I am. You can have me or leave me alone. Some kissed lemons in the graveyard below. Here in death you see new adventures grow. I see you at last, but mostly a ghost on this end of the telescope. Now this will not be easy. Words out, the doctor is not coming in. This genie too angry to go back into the bottle again. Closer than ever and covered in birds, a bone-colored moon fills the west. Now throats will be slashed and flags will unfurl. This time will divide us in gangs. Now years of progress dig in the sand. Companions we made didn't last. Now lousy lovers do well with their hands, but I'll reach you like nobody can. Now slow and easy, you let your paddle go. Down at the bottom, there's more hell to row. I see clear at last, I love, I loathe, on this end of the telescope.
Psychic's Lounge. Your table awaits you. Walk this way.
I see you got your metaphysical Mountain Dew over there.
Yeah.
How's it working?
Pretty good so far.
We wanted to talk about...
half a case in a day and a half.
Ooh. That could put you definitely in an altered state. Well, we wanted to talk about the Thule Society. We're still gonna.
Yeah.
But when I was... It's kind of...
That's
huge.
Ridiculous.
What?
What it says under the thing.
Just wait.
That's ridiculous.
I couldn't.
I'm looking at the screen. That's ridiculous.
I couldn't resist, right? So I'm looking to increase my knowledge about the Thule Society, right? And I the first thing I found was on a forum that I'm not going to say the name of. But the subject of the post that I read first was, the Thule Society is recruiting, 10 exclamation points after it. And we'll talk about that in a second. But then I thought, I went to that site, right, where supposedly they're recruiting, and they have a Facebook button.
Yeah, right.
And I'm going, oh, God. So my twisted little brain started thinking, gee, I wonder how many other, here come the air quotes, secret societies are on Facebook.
Well, the Thule wasn't a secret society.
No, not at all.
So, but some of those, what are the ones that were secret societies?
Right. Well, they're calling themselves one now, but okay, we'll get to that in a second. Anyway, so other secret societies on Facebook are, and I'll put the links on in the post about the show. The Knights Templar.
So they weren't a secret society either.
Right. And they said, now Facebook has these new like buttons.
Uh-huh.
So I just kind of thought I would add, 5,090 people like that.
Right. Who else we got?
And the Grand College of Rites, which is the Masonic branch.
The Masons weren't a secret society either.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, I got these from a list of secret societies.
I'm not saying you're saying they were. I'm saying the morons who obviously put these on the internet thought they were.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
Right.
So there's no inflection upon you. I understand you put these here for comedic value.
Yeah.
All right. So continue.
The Illuminati.
Yeah. A lot of people know about them. I guess they're a secret society. I don't know.
Okay. 9,160 people like them. So,
yeah, I guess.
Not a secret anymore.
Right.
Now, the Missouri Freemasons was an interesting representation because it became clear that each individual, what is it, and not, sect.
Lodge.
Yeah, lodge. Thank you.
Well, it's lodges within the thing. I guess there's Mason lodges. So I guess there's disciplines or... No, really.
Because
there's that Scottish Rite stuff. So I guess,
right.
I guess you would refer to that as a discipline of...
sorts
of masonry.
Oh yeah, lodges.
Well, the lodges is
right.
No, it's a lodge is like a
fort. No,
a lodge is like a local meeting hall. It's a lodge. It's a local club.
Right.
Meaning, so it would be like the local Mason.
Yes.
You know what I mean? The local Mason hall. But that does not delineate a subset of masonry,
right.
Which is what the
Right. The Grand College of Rites is different. It's a subset.
Right,
but the other one. Missouri,
so that's not a subset. What you're saying is those are Masons in Missouri.
Right.
Okay.
So each.
That changes the context of everything with that.
But that's a different one. Yeah.
Yeah.
But each lodge has their own Facebook page. Okay.
Yeah. But that makes sense because remember, this is a fraternal order.
Yeah.
So it's not, and they're not a secret.
Right.
So why wouldn't the Masons be using the internet like anybody else?
I don't know.
You got any Knights of Columbus stuff up there?
No.
How about the Shriners, which I think are a subset of Masonry as well?
No, they are. They all have their little, and their cute little fezzes with the tassels.
I like fezzes. Fezzes are cool.
But, yeah, they each individually have their own, depending on their area geographically.
What's that one? What's that one?
The Rosicrucian Order.
Okay. No, that's not the one I was pointing to. But okay, they're pretty cool.
Oh, this one?
Yeah, no, that one.
The next one?
Yeah, what's that?
Oh. The Pyramid Lodge of the OTO.
Oh, wow.
Ordo. I know, right? I never can say it. Ordo Templis.
Right, weren't they?
Something or other.
Is that Mountain Dew again? Weren't they? Wasn't that like the predecessor to the whatchamacallit, the Golden Dawn?
Right, yes.
Wasn't it?
Correct.
I think it was.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So they're of German origin too, aren't they, though, too?
Yeah, they are.
Okay.
And then the Golden Dawn was the English.
Right, yeah, with an English counterpart. And then Crowley Branch. Split off from there.
Right.
What's that last one?
This one is... I put Bilderbergs, or the Bilderbergers, in, and I
build
came
a
back
burger.
With this. Right.
I always thought that would be a great chain. You could have a Bilderberger where it becomes a restaurant chain.
Yeah.
But also, and all the proceeds go to...
We have to do that.
Yeah.
This one is called Gilderberg. Gilderberg. Why a gathering of distinguished individuals.
Okay.
And when you try to sign up for or say that you like it, it says, please wait for the Grand Master to approve you. And it has, all these all these links to extremely
with,
rich
robes and all sorts of stuff. It's a little too.
I know. And the last thing that I found, which I was just completely serendipitous, as someone who's purporting that Facebook is itself an, a conspiracy of the Illuminati.
Well, and that's more like it. All right. You know what I'm saying? At least that, we're back to that. That one, that's the best one.
I know.
That guy gets it.
He does, right? Yeah, he's seeing that they're all teaching us how to utilize the herd mentality to, its finest. So, I just had all kinds of fun this afternoon laughing at those guys.
I just want to, again, preface my involvement with this particular topic.
Yes.
As it was really the conspiracy stuff that got me interested initially in anything having to do with paranormal and metaphysical. And, people would say that there is a difference between these things, and there obviously is. But, again, it all, in my mind, if it's a topic that would be covered at any point in time on Coast to Coast, then it fits into a realm of, again, what would you call it? It's got so many subgenres where it winds up being, but conspiracy theory, particularly the Kennedy assassination, is what got me really interested in the paranormal. In the metaphysical paranormal conspiracy.
Well, I would go ahead and say the occult because it's hidden knowledge and information.
Well, I guess
that are hidden.
There's that delineation again where you make there's a difference between some people would say you could put cryptozoology in that category as well
you
too.
Could.
But there some of this is so far fetched and I guess the best way to put it is some sort of if not unified conspiracy theory at least unified theory.
Mm-hmm.
That involves all of these aspects.
Right.
So to me, it's all kind of what, but that was my gateway into, and then from there, it went to various other, with the Holy Blood, Holy Grail thing, got me interested in the religious aspects of things. And there's a certain metaphysical aspect of that because it goes into the Cathars and it goes back around. And, a lot of these quote unquote grand or great conspiracy theories involve the concept of some sort of restoration of some great thing.
Yes, of a society or a race or even an organization.
Right. Or, in some cases, a bloodline or, a returning to French monarchs. This sort of, and it's all kind of, into this one big hairy, fuzzy ball.
Right.
Like a hairball that a kitty kind of regurgitated.
So I learned a lot of stuff about I'd heard of the Thule Society, of course, and, like a lot of people, it was assumed that Hitler was involved and all this kind of stuff, but it was not.
Well, one, they weren't a secret society. Mm-hmm. First of all, they met right out in the open in a hotel. You say Hitler wasn't involved. I think it had more to do with the concept of a lot of what was the mythology that was built up within the Thule Society wound up being incorporated into that Aryan, that mythology that they created, which obviously never really existed. The original Aryans were little brown people in India, most likely.
Yeah.
And that didn't jive with, obviously, a lot of the German superiority. But, so again, some people make it sound like Hitler was attending meetings. And
I know, right?
It's like, I think when you think the Ravenscroft book, it winds up being, preposterous, for lack of a better word.
That's an excellent point, because while one of the things that I ran across was one of his Nuremberg speeches where he talked about, I think it was in 38,
right,
where he talked about that the religion and mysticism has no place in the kind of society that he was trying to build, and that he believed that Germany, that the Germanic bloodline deserved, you know, more or less, you know, that it was all about strength, physical strength and mental strength. Right. And, you know, but it seems to me that with that Spear of Destiny thing, because he was interested in the artifact,
right,
that he only wanted his...
Well, what he said, you know, and what they
society.
Said, what they said and what they did,
right,
you know, versus who they what they actually believed.
Mm-hmm.
This is a hodgepodge of, you know, it's ludicrous to think in terms of, you know, linearness, because again, this is the type of insanity that this involves is a complex, layered type thing. I don't doubt at any point in time, or while they were trying to get some level of support, that there weren't various factions of thought and schools of thought that they wrote upon and possibly incorporated at times. As you know, again, it becomes like Constantine, where you do things for unification purposes.
Yeah.
Where it just consolidates your base. You know, if you've got three or four different disenfranchised groups, you want to capitalize on that and kind of meld things together so that you can have these three or four different groups as your base.
Right.
And you're saying certain things along certain lines of agenda that appeal to these groups so that you can keep that base, you know?
But wasn't it were a couple of members of his cabinet that were actually members of the Soul Society, but not Hitler,
right? Supposedly, there's a long, and this goes back to, like, again, they're drawing upon, if you look at the dates involved with this is all pre-World War I.
Yeah.
What they're doing is drawing upon a certain, they're tapping into a certain mythology that allowed them to, meaning when I say them, the National Socialists, to give themselves that false pedigree.
Yeah, now let's stop there and kind of explain that a little bit. What their beliefs were. What did they think? What was Thule anyway?
Well, Ari, I think you'd be better qualified to discuss, because Thule was more about the metaphysical than anything else. And again, anybody who listens to this program knows that the metaphysical isn't my...
Yeah, well, basically what it was
also
was
contemporary to the spiritual movement in America. Also, something interesting to think about.
Absolutely. It was, Thule was really a concept. It was not a physical thing or a place, although that mythology seemed to change later.
There you go, because they wove it.
Right, exactly. It was supposedly a place far, far away. A place at the end of the world. You know, which was never meant to be like an actual location.
We would say like a Valhalla.
Yeah.
Or Shangri-La.
Yes.
You know, and they were looking for it. The Germans were actively looking for it.
Right, right. They were actively looking for it because they believed through literature, through fiction, actually.
Well, yeah.
That.
There's that mythology again.
Right. That through a novel, as a matter of fact, that is where their origin lied, was in this place.
You could take it back to Parsifal, even if you wanted. You know, von, what's his name, who wrote, you know, von Eschenberg, as far as the Grail stuff.
Yeah.
You know, again, and that predates the Christianized concept of the Grail.
It does.
What that did is took an older mythology and make that road on top of Christian symbiology so that it would move along and sell to a middle-aged Christian audience or a medieval Christian audience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just thought I'd...
Right. No, but so correct me if I'm wrong, but they somehow got the idea that the Germanic peoples were descended from the Romans and had every right to...
The essence and the crux of it becomes is that the Aryans were the true chosen people.
Yeah.
Meaning that everything that the Jews claimed for themselves as far as their relationship with Yahweh and the Promised Land and just what that's the, yeah.
That they were, the Aryans were the ones who had the right to rule the world, much like the Romans did, I guess I should have said. Right.
Yes.
So therefore they went after those attributes physically and mentally, even spiritually.
Well, yeah. Again, you know, again, if you, and I've said this very many times, and so have a lot of other people, you know, if you take National Socialism as mm-hmm. strictly a political movement, you're missing the point entirely.
Yeah.
I mean, they literally created a, again, wove out of various strands,
mm-hmm.
you know, a little bit of philosophy, a little bit mm-hmm. of, you know, again, German heritage, Wagner and all that, mm-hmm. Faust. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, the interesting thing about the Thule Society is that they were into a lot of, you know, again, they were like the OTO. Again, it winds up being a lot like the OTO or a lot like the Golden Dawn. They were a fraternal order mm-hmm. of, and not, I mean, with, like, could you call it magic? I mean, it was really, you know, more spiritual than magic.
It was more spiritual than magic because they were not out to
manipulate via magic.
Yeah, that's the word.
It wasn't, you know,
right. They weren't going to control a population,
right, or bring anything about per se.
Right. They were going to. It was about self-awareness. It was about personal and individual, and yet national strength, racial strength among themselves,
right,
aka the Aryans, right. And it was about being the strongest and having the right, they really believed, right, to be the ruling society, the ruling race.
Again, this is, you know,
on the planet.
You got to remember, we're saying Aryan. This is what the National Socialist, and obviously National Socialist being a Nazi, in case anybody's not aware of that for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the Nazis grabbed onto. You know, when you talk about the Reich and you talk about the thousand years, again, this is what they were. That this whole Aryan concept,
right,
comes from this stream of thought.
Right. And as far as, you know, being Aryan is concerned, they full well meant where they were talking about their Nordic and Germanic history,
which they equated to even the concept of, like, say, this was a race
mm-hmm.
that they were descended from.
Right.
That was, say, the equivalent of what a lot of people theorize Atlantis.
Yes.
Was about.
Right.
Superior. So we're talking about it, and there was, that's why I talk about the concept of Shangri-La. I forget there mm-hmm. was a name for the city. There was a city, and it was, and it's held in the same regard as Atlantis was.
Yeah.
And the German people, at least the Thule Society,
Lumeria
mm-hmm. maintained that that's where they were descended from,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and that made them inherently superior.
Right.
So they weren't, and this is with the concept of the superhuman. Now, you know, there's a lot of other stuff, the things they pointed to support this,
mm-hmm.
Nietzsche.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, with beyond, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And a lot of philosophy and a lot of whatever they could find within German culture and German history to bolster this.
Right.
And they just wove it, this tapestry.
Right. And they even included the Nordic pantheon.
Right.
You know,
they were very much into the rune stones to a certain degree. The swastika is a rune.
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, it certainly is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, it wasn't about influencing others through magical means.
No.
It was having let's call it special knowledge or mm-hmm. divine
esoteric
knowledge. Right, and having that would right. strengthen their, you know, they believed that they had a particular life force that enabled them to be able to use these abilities and that you had
manipulate
to remain
in some way.
Right, and that you had to be, in order to use them effectively, you had to be physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually strong, all in balance like that,
it,
you know?
It winds up being more along the lines of something that would be like shamanistic.
Yeah.
In its manipulation rather than magical.
Right.
Again, than any sort of
influential as opposed to manipulative.
You're trying to influence the forces of nature rather than contain them in any sort of way. I mean, there's, you know, you go back and there's, you know, at least in regards to the Nazis, it's all sorts of wild stuff floating around.
Yeah.
You know, you make reference to certain people, you know, there's a big ass time gap involved here from when, you know, when the Thule Society was in its full swing and the Nazi Party rose.
Long
you know,
time.
There are elements of it left, right, again, but they mm-hmm. pointed to that, and there was an element of it left, and several people within the party itself
mm-hmm.
had a certain affection for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it wound up being, again, incorporated.
Right, they were drawn to it.
Right, you know, I forget who had the castle that was built on the medieval concept of what the castle and the Grail legend was
oh,
on.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I forget which,
name escapes me.
Right. Now, a lot of this, you got to remember that the Nazis, and rightfully so, but the Nazis have been vilified,
mm-hmm.
obviously, for the last 67 years mm-hmm. to a great degree. So a lot of the information that we have about this particular aspect of things, because this isn't what you would call mainstream textbook stuff.
Right.
National Socialism is not viewed from a spiritual or religious aspect whatsoever at all. The closest you'll get is that Hitler was a lapsed Catholic at one point in time.
Yeah.
You know, but again, the level of contradiction, you know, now it's why we believe that Hitler's grandmother, maternal grandmother, was probably Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there is a level of self-loathing. There is, you know, and it was a perfect storm.
Yeah.
You know, and people point towards things like at one point in time, he, meaning Hitler, decreed that a ban on metaphysical in Germany. And I know would it be psychics or mediumship, any of that stuff. That primarily had to do with Hess, Rudolf Hess, taking off and trying to broker that peace deal in England. Or, you know, he flew to Scotland.
Right.
Because, and Hess, by the way, Hess, my favorite Nazi, not for nothing. Mm-hmm. Never indicted for crimes against humanity, Rudolf Hess. I would just like to say that. He also wasn't in Germany for a good three quarters of the war.
Mm-hmm.
So that ban was more about the influence that it had on other people than any sort of true suppression of stuff. Because Hess, in the party's eyes, Hess kind of went off the wall and you know, consulted with mediums and a psychic who told him that you should go and try and broker some sort of peace. And
interesting is that?
And he did.
Yeah, so, and he did.
That's
yeah.
a whole other conspiracy about whether he, whether the guy that they shot down lived or not, and whether the person who actually went and served the time at Spandau Prison was actually Rudolf Hess or not, who died in the '80s. But anyway, that's
But secret societies were banned. All sorts of metaphysical activities were banned. You know, you couldn't, you could no longer meet. And
but this could be interpreted in several different ways, because again, this is either one, the Hess thing. Mm-hmm. It was a reaction to the Hess thing, or two, considering that the party had used these very mechanisms to build itself and to move itself along, it kind of burned the bridge behind it so that it couldn't happen again, because it understood, you know, again, if anybody was going to write a book or a manual on how to overthrow a government piece by piece, it would have been the National Socialists, because they pretty much dismantled Germany's government. I mean, he had himself, within the space of 10 years, he was running the show.
Yeah.
And it was done in degrees. It wasn't a military coup.
No.
It was shared power.
Right.
And then, you know, again, the last step was, of course, the burning of the Reichstag, which enabled him to seize control in a emergency war powers-like circumstance and then never give it back.
Yeah. Yeah, in an extremely emotional, to say the very least, circumstances, you know, and here he is standing up and say, I have just what you need.
Tell us a little bit more about Thule itself, though, because again, it winds up being interesting, because with the Gap, this is what they drew upon for a good part of their mythology.
Right, so. They were not, let's going back to their actual beliefs, their primary, now they began as a study group, and they their primary focus became the ultimate rule. You know, that was their credo, I guess you could call it. Let's see. They identified themselves to be from ancient Hyperborea. I think that's what we were talking about
that's
before.
Like a lot of
lost ancient landmass. Right.
That's almost to a certain degree like what Robert E. Howard drew upon for the fantasy stuff with Conan and all that.
Right. And as you mentioned. But now they had not that many followers, if you ask me. Not really.
Or
members.
Very mainstream.
No, they really didn't have. Maybe about 1,500, 250 in Munich, you know, my research says, and 1,500 in Greater Bavaria. They were often held in luxury hotels, like you said.
Interestingly enough, and this is where some of these connections come into place. There was some remnant of this society that didn't flicker. You know, like the spiritualist movement in America flickered, and by a certain amount of time, it was done.
Yeah.
And Germany had kind of stayed relatively consistent and ebbed and flowed. Mm-hmm. So there were still remnants of Thule, the Thule Society, in play when the National Socialists started to make their grab for power.
Yeah.
Some of the allegations are, you know, it's believed that, I forget which one of the hotels, because there were several that they met in. There's documentation that supposedly indicates that there were the National Workers Party was meeting at the same time in the same hotel as the Thule Society, and that there was some cross-pollination just based upon that level.
There probably was, because it seems to me the Thule Society's studies and goals and discussions, and it was more about social engineering and power than
which
it was.
Which is exactly what national socialism wound up being about, right, to a large degree. Right. That's why, again, they drew upon so much.
Yeah, it wasn't some esoteric organization or group where they sat around and learned how to meditate better or how to get in touch with the Nordic pantheon. They studied those things, yes, and they were interested in that history and fully believed the Aryan race had roots, had its beginnings in that history.
Eugenics thing comes from as well,
yes,
too.
But it wasn't because of the metaphysical stuff.
No.
It was because of their ability, as they saw it, to be superior beings and to be powerful and be in control, not through being airy-fairy, dare I say, not through being metaphysical.
It was a birthright, what was considered to be, again, a birthright.
Right, but through becoming who you were supposed to be. I guess you could almost say their goal was to educate the Germanic people of who helped them remember who they really were supposed to be,
right,
you know? And when you think about the state, as you've said before, Germany was in about that time, you know, they weren't doing so hot.
No,
economically.
No, it's quite, you know, and it's because it's really, when you look at this, it's just really so complex. Again.
Yeah.
It's, you know, World War One at this point in time hadn't even broken out yet.
Right.
So you had that level of German aggression. Immediately following World War One, again, you have, with the treaty at Versailles, you have Germany being treated horribly. I mean, mm-hmm. they were responsible for World War One. It was obviously German aggression.
Yeah.
But they were treated so horribly that, again, this kind of set the stage. For the National Socialists. To, again, the Nazis, mm-hmm. to really have a new government and a new concept, because Germany was so battered and its image of itself was so low,
right.
that it literally needed, you know, to something to rebuild on. And these are the things that they chose to rebuild on.
Right.
This was, you know.
And one of the things the organization Hitler did join was the Workers' Party.
Well, the German Workers' Party is what wound up morphing into the National Socialists.
Right.
He was originally supposedly, again, I say supposedly because, you know, with history, it's so difficult. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, people tell you that this, that, the other thing happened. We can't clearly tell you what happened November 22nd, 1963, mm-hmm. for Christ's sakes. I'm going to tell you anything else. You know what I mean? I love these people. 5,000 years ago, you don't know nothing.
Right.
You know nothing. But again, within this context, it's widely believed that he was originally sent there by the army to spy on this group and to be an informant on the National Workers' Party.
Right.
And he wound up going and liking what he heard and becoming an active member.
Right.
You know, and obviously very involved.
Right.
So.
Right. And as it just turns out later on, the men who were closest to him in his cabinet and his military command were members of both.
Right. Right. So again, there's that cross-pollination thing, whereas, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So it was
almost like a perfect storm, really, if you stop and think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, because Blavatsky was already gone by then. I mean, she was,
But she had come to America. You know, she lived in Philadelphia for a while. Right. She lived in New York City for a while. You know, and by then, you know, she was gone, But just, for years, she had been very sick and very, you know, just not held up in her hotel room, basically writing more letters and essays for years and years and years before that. So they didn't even,
they were in the palmistry as well, weren't they? And phrenology, the bumps as well too, because it was all about measurements in regards to that Aryan.
Yeah. Well, see, that's again, interesting. These were some of the things that were brought to
measurements,
right. That were proposed to Hitler. These esoteric ideas, you know, phrenology, palmistry, you know, and even ESP.
Well, a lot of the racial purity stuff was based
on. Right, right, exactly. Proposed to Hitler as a way to delineate between
wheat from chaff.
Right, exactly. And when you follow the criteria, the history of the criteria that was used, you'll see that it really wasn't very long before some of that stuff was poo-pooed, you know.
I'll talk about pseudoscience.
Yeah, and they changed.
Again, they did
change. It, you know, radically and often, you know, what constituted an Aryan and who wasn't.
Right.
You know, so they kept experimenting.
Well, again, ultimately, this is an important thing to remember. It just, it winds up being this hodgepodge of whatever we can use to support what we believe and what we're trying to sell.
Thank you.
At any given point in time. So again, they you know, they incorporated stuff, then they got rid of stuff, then they brought more stuff. I mean, it nothing. And I'm not talking about Thule itself, although obviously it's a little bit on the crackpot side, but it's distinctly and uniquely German. And it's, and that's a, you know, so it's German crackpots, which is, again,
a little scarier. You
know, it winds up, it just winds up being amazing. It just be, it's all a rationale for a pattern of behavior.
Right.
That obviously manifested.
There's no way to really discuss it in detail or educate anybody in detail in 1 hour and a half long show.
No. I don't think, you know. Again,
right.
You know, and there's a decent amount of stuff.
Yeah.
On this out there. I mean,
there's,
you can go into the internet. Again, the Ravenscroft book is a little too fantastical for my
liking.
Don't
do that.
That reads like, do you have the book that you were using for research?
Oh, gosh. Over here. Let me see.
Yeah. See if you can, maybe you can post that up. I don't even know if that's still in print, but it's one of the more,
In the, right. It's on a lower pile than this. Wait.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, very, very simple. The Occult Roots of Nazism, Secret Aryan Cults and Their Influence on Nazi Ideology by Nicholas Godric Clark.
That's the one to get.
Yeah, this is the, let's see, New York Press. I don't even know if this is in print anymore. You might be able to find this on Amazon.
Yeah.
This goes back to 92. So, first printing 85.
Okay, it's so probably not that hard to find then.
Yeah, this is, again, a little bit more... It looks at it as from an actual incorporation. I mean, how it kind of evolved, rather than, like I said, the Ravenscroft stuff reads like
a novel, almost.
Like Castle Wolfenstein, for Christ's sake. No, really, it does. You know, it's
And I just, one thing I want to mention before I make the other point that I was going to make, hopefully I won't forget it, is the Vril aspect of it. Do you know about that?
The
Vril.
Isn't that some sort of spiritual essence
thing,
right?
Right. Members of the Thule Society believed, as many, I guess we could just go ahead and call them Aryans and Nazis, came to believe, and even Blavatsky believed this, which just boggled my mind, I guess you could say, but maybe not. Vril is a substance described in a novel written by Edward Bulwer Lytton in 1871, called The Coming Race. It was later reprinted as Vril, The Power of the Coming Race. Now, they used this, the Thule Society used this as a kind of handbook. You know, this, it was about a superior race where even women were superior to most people. They were, in this novel, the women were the taller, stronger, more physically and mentally intelligent, intelligentsia and adept in society. You know, they were the warriors. And they contained the substance, all of the population in this book, called Vril. And it was supposed to give them supernatural strengths. It was supposed to help them understand everything that other people didn't. You know, it was supposed to heal. It could kill. It just ran the gamut of superpowers, I guess you could say, this one particular substance. And people came to believe, including many theosophists, that this was real.
Right. Well, there's a delineation. You're going to talk about theosophy because, there, again, where does the lines become obscured?
Yeah.
Because theosophy winds up crossing over into Thule, because there was a level of, you know, and again, you always talk about this cross-pollination, whereas none of these things stand on, this is the important thing to understand.
Right.
None of these things stand on their own within the larger picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's a homogenized, you know, it's almost
so
like, again, it's also why it is so confusing, but there's points where these things cross over each other, and it's just amazing.
And I think it's important to note too that a lot of people who became theosophists, and this includes Blavatsky and Aleister Crowley and whatnot, got into, let's just say, those things because of their political discontent, because of their personal disenfranchisement, because of their self-imposed and even sometimes realistically imposed individualization or segregation from the mainstream.
Right. Interestingly enough, throughout history, it's disenfranchised people who wind up doing, you know, forming
right.
organizations and groups like
this. So it's not a surprise that they interweave that.
Right, but it's what causes these things to be created, but it's also what causes these things to be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can't manage to hold on to,
right.
you know, and it's almost like a some sort of mental...
Yeah.
I don't know what it's. You know, I don't know what the term to describe it as. But, yeah, it's interesting. Within the party itself, it's supposedly, I believe it's Himmler, who had most of the occult leanings.
Yeah, I would say that's from what I researched. Yeah,
I believe it was Himmler who had the castle as well too.
I think,
even the lightning bolts, the dual lightning bolts. Yes. You know, there's so much that was incorporated into, and that would be the SS. So much that was incorporated into, again, not. Nazism, you know, in the party itself, you know, the stylized lines, and look at the level of the theater, you know, when you look at these speeches and whatnot.
Yes.
You know, it's, again, it's all meant as it's like a one big pick me up, you know, it's one big theatrical experience.
It was all about ecstasy and pride and power.
Yeah, you should put the title of that book up there.
Yeah, I will. I definitely will.
I still think that that's the best, the most level, you know, even-handed.
Yeah, maybe I can even find a link to buy it. So,
yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'd be shocked if that one's still in
progress. Who knows? Right. Anyway, I'll put a picture of it, if nothing else, because I'm sure I can find one of those.
Yeah, it's difficult. You know, as Rez said, it's difficult to do this topic justice, really, considering how, you know, complex it winds up being.
Yeah.
But, again, what happened in Germany in the 30s, could happen anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's again, you just get a perfect storm of things occurring. You say, oh, you know, how often does it happen? It happens more often than you might think.
Yeah, and right. And don't assume just because you can't see it happening or don't know it's happening that it's not.
Right.
And how important. That's why I keep saying it's so important, why we both keep saying it's so important to be aware of what you're listening to and who you're listening to and the choices that you make. And none of this stuff is new. Nothing that you see happening now is new. Nothing.
No,
whether it's political, metaphysical, spiritual, not new. Just wears a different suit and has a different accent.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Same play, different characters.
Yeah.
Or no, what is it? Same. It's all right.
Yeah. SSDD.
Want to get Resmerized in private? Chat with Res one-to-one in private live video chat or by phone. Appointments at reasonable rates available that fit your schedule. Just go to Resmerized.com and click on the link that says Resmerize Me. Continues with your host, Rez Miranda.
Miles of black ribbon on the low highway, men turning into boys on the low highway. Rest up, creeps by on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway.
So anyway, before I clicked one, I should have kept my hands to myself.
The actual quote is, the play never changes, just the cast of characters.
Thank you. There you go. And now, following a period of intense prayer during which he knelt on damp grass as he gazed heavenwards at Knock Shrine yesterday, which is in Ireland, by the way, self-proclaimed visionary Joel Coleman claimed he'd been imparted a fantastic message by Mary. Jabbing his finger at a cloudy sky, Mr. Coleman said, "I seen her there, and I seen her there. She did make herself known." Although reluctant to go into any details about the message he received, in other words, it's a secret. Mr. Coleman did say the Blessed Virgin had been angry about the way he had been treated by shrine authorities.
Okay.
You know, if you're going to have a deity stand up for you, I suppose that's a pretty good one. He complained that he and his followers had not been allowed. What?
Not for nothing. Thousands and thousands, if not millions, of people have died over the fact, arguing over the fact whether Mary was a deity or not. Just so you know, so I wouldn't banty that about.
I'm very sorry. I'm not Catholic. There's a lot of things that I don't know about. He complained that he and his followers had not been allowed to pray as they had wished in the apparition chapel.
Naked?
Maybe. Maybe that's how they wished, you know. I personally want to visit a place called Apparition Chapel because that just fascinates me. Part of the largest shrine in the world dedicated to Mary, as they say, our Blessed Lady. So I looked them up on the net, and it's huge, the shrine. It's like hundreds of people every week visit this place.
Okay. Why? And what significance does it have? I mean, what?
Oh, they have...
What is enshrined there?
Well...
It's a fair question.
Yeah. They've had, since about the mid-1800s, they've had so many people, they meaning the church, Catholic church...
More than lords?
Yeah. Have actually. So many reports of seeing Mary and a couple of the saints in that same spot that they finally did something that the Vatican calls a commission of inquiry, where they go and they talk to everybody over and over again, and they try and verify.
Say about it?
They're saying that it's legit, that it's a legit shrine.
I wonder how they feel about leprechauns.
I know. Nobody ever asked. But I thought that it would be such a cool and interesting thing, and I'm not being facetious here when I say that paranormal groups, I mean, really, you know, good ones, not stupid, you know, extreme ones, should go to places like this, perhaps, instead of just asylums and abandoned hospital.
You're mixing metaphors here. So.
Well, I know, but what they're looking for is communication from the other side.
Yeah, but that's not... that you can't...
I mean, from heaven is from up, not the other side.
But ultimately, at the
apparition...
end of, ultimately, at the end of the day, you're not going to get a network who plans on airing something with commercials so it can be commercially viable to go and look for a contact at a religious site.
From Virgin Mary?
At a religious site. How come they don't go, not for nothing, how come they never go to any of the concentration camps?
That's my question, too.
Same thing. It's politically touchy. Do you understand?
I guess a little bit too real, perhaps, to some people.
It seems to me, you know, X number of millions of people died in a lot of these sites in Germany you know.
They talk about that would be amazing.
How many people they talk about Gettysburg, right? How many people died at Gettysburg? 50,000, something like that?
I don't 40, know. 40, a lot. 40, really 40, a lot.
30? I forget what it was.
Oh, I don't remember.
Another speech was about 2.5 minutes. no, seriously.
Yeah. You
know, so, again, you go there. But no,
so
it would be offensive to Catholics. Just like it would be offensive to Jews.
I think it, if handled,
and
I
Lord
think it
knows
could be
everything's
handled
offensive
well.
To Islam. I mean,
well, yeah.
Guys in bear suits are offensive
Please.
To Islam.
I really. Wouldn't send anybody to investigate anything over there. Except
I'm
maybe,
just saying.
Right. Well, I think it could be done
it's
in
not commercially viable.
A graceful
it's not
manner.
Commercially viable.
Okay.
Done.
Nano
it's about these things are about entertainment, not pissing people off.
I know. I know. Well, I would do it very respectfully. Nanotube transistor may help humans bond with machines, as if that's what any of us wanted to do. Well, some do. Scientists in the U.S. have taken a big step toward bridging the gap between the mind and the machine using something called ATP, adenosine triphosphate, the molecular medium of energy exchange present in nearly all living cells. Alexander Noy at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California and colleagues have created a novel transistor that could allow electronic devices that can be hooked directly into the nervous system.
Looking forward to this.
Goody. Yeah. Can I just have a card? The new transistor is made up of a carbon nanotube, which behaves as a semiconductor. Oh, yeah. That's what I want in my body. Bridging the gap between two metal electrodes encoded with an insulating polymer layer that leaves the middle section of the nanotube exposed.
The whole thing runs on Mountain Dew.
Told ya. The entire device is then coated again, this time with a lipid bilayer similar to those that form the membranes surrounding our body's cells. Sounds like alien implant to me.
Yeah.
The team then applied a voltage across the transistor's electrodes and poured a solution containing ATP and potassium and sodium ions onto the device. This caused a current to flow through the electrodes, and the higher the concentration of ATP was, the more strongly the current flowed.
Right. What's all this mean?
So, it means... I maybe lose my place here. This type of technology could be used to construct seamless bioelectronic interfaces to allow better communication between living organisms and machines.
Okay.
So in other words, think it, make the machine work.
Any other words?
The machine can talk to you.
Gotcha.
Blah, blah, blah.
It's just another interface.
Yeah.
Mouse in your head.
With it's with
the
you
mouse
know,
in your head.
Yeah. With a semiconductor. Mm-hmm. Creepy. I don't really like it. So that's that.
Right.
Oh.
Hey, didn't that guy die?
Who? Yes. Yes. Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah.
I wanted to especially say, yes, absolutely, today.
Yes.
Sad thing. Ronnie James Dio, who was 67 years old and was with Black Sabbath several different times.
Right. And he, right. Himself, and he was in a Rainbow, right?
Right. Right. And right. Rainbow was his first. Yeah. And had a successful career on his own as well.
A metal legend.
Absolutely.
A legend within metal.
Right.
I mean, 67. 67. Well,
right. Left this plane of existence.
Shuffled off his mortal coil.
Yep. From stomach cancer today.
Stomach cancer.
As a matter of fact. Yeah. And he was planning, he and his current band, called Heaven and Hell, by the way, were planning to continue their tour as soon as he recuperated and went through treatment and all that. And,
right.
And
gave up the ghost.
Yeah. The forces that be just said, that's that. So, I don't know. Thank you for the magic, Ronnie James Dio. Mm. It was a really incredible voice and contributed a lot. I remember when Black Sabbath was going on when I was a teenager, because I'm old now.
So many incarnations.
I know. But they were, you know, boy, you just didn't want to listen to them. They were satanic. Only the bad kids listened to Black Sabbath, which I had all their records under my bed.
These days they seem kind of pale.
I know, right?
Came out. Consequently,
yeah, my how things change. Mm-hmm. How things change. So, rest in peace, Ronnie James Dio. Absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Our quote for this week is: whoever undertakes to set himself up as a judge of truth and knowledge is shipwrecked by the laughter of the gods. Albert Einstein. From Lee and me. Thank you for listening, and rest in peace, especially you, Ronnie James Dio.
And now you are alone, my friend.
We thank you for being brave enough to get mesmerized for a little while, but we can't stay. We release you now to your world of creature comforts and reality as you perceive it to be, hoping that you will not be quite the same as you ever were. Do come in.